I was determined to spend some time there at Stephen's Gate, one of seven openings in the eastern wall of Jerusalem, and the presumed location of his witness to Jesus Christ and his own death by stoning. Also called the Lion's Gate, it has significant meaning for both Arab and Jewish history. But one can also walk from there along the Via Dolorosa, Christ's painful journey to the place of his crucifixion. So I did stand outside the wall for a long time, and I imagined what it would be like for my holy namesake, the very first named deacon. I thought about how he was one of seven men of high character who were designated simply to serve the community, making sure that no one was ignored or left out. And yet a very short time later, he had become this powerful preacher and evangelist who was seen by some of the religious leaders as the same kind of threat as Jesus himself. Luke sees all kinds of parallels between Stephen and Jesus. At the beginning of the passage today, Stephen is already two full pages in the Bible into his recapitulation of Jewish history, which he boldly declares points to Jesus as the longed-for Messiah. It is by far the longest speech in the New Testament. Someone suggested to me after my ordination that if I wanted to take him as a model for my diaconal ministry, I should be concerned that possibly Jesus wasn't stoned for his faith, but because it was the only way to get him to shut up. Why shouldn't they be enraged at him? Who wouldn't have been? The movement was spreading rapidly. Even many of the priests were followers. And now this nobody had the nerve to teach the PhDs of the time about their own subject of expertise and their own history. He called his accusers every name in the repertoire of the prophets of old. They were the names that God had applied to those of old who had persecuted the prophets. You stiff-necked people, uncircumcised of heart and ears. What a strange image. But even in the time of the Old Covenant, there was the expectation that the outward sign of the covenant, circumcision, must be lived out in spirit. Stephen adds his own insults by calling them betrayers and killers of the righteous one and accusing them of opposing the Holy Spirit, which had only recently come with power on the people at Pentecost. Jesus had a different kind of audience from Stephen. They weren't violent, but they were just as dumb. He had just fed a huge crowd from a few small loaves. But what did they say right after receiving an amazingly miraculous sign? But hey, what sign are you going to give us so that we may see it and believe you? So Jesus makes his attempt to get through to those uncircumcised ears. Who do you think fed you in the desert? Moses didn't feed you. God did. And what about what just happened? Were you fed by bread, which you already possessed? No. It was I who multiplied your pathetic little offering into a feast to satisfy you, your bodies at least, fully. And we might hear, does that remind us of what happens at Mass and the great exchange of bread and wine for Jesus' own body and blood? In both cases, the people were not saved by the bread that they ate. Jesus talking about those of old in the desert and those who had just received the miracle of the multiplication of the loaves. But he says, there is true bread which comes from heaven. That's the bread that you should desire. That's what will satisfy you in ways that you can't imagine and which has the power to save you. Give us that bread, they ask. Where will that kind of bread come from? Again, from the Father, but this time through his only begotten Son. The true bread from heaven, the bread of life itself, himself. Uncircumcised hearts and ears, not seeing the miracle of bread, it's really about perceiving or understanding, isn't it? Two different audiences, both fail to perceive the miracle in front of them. the timeless one from heaven. The manna perished, and so would they if they trusted in it. The wilderness manna, though, was not false bread. It's not that there was something wrong with it. It was just that it was merely a sign of the imperishable Eucharistic bread that the Father sends down from heaven in Jesus. The sign points the way. Don't believe in the sign. Believe in the reality. Stephen, it says, was able to gaze directly into heaven and see that reality. Seeing the heavenly reality changes everything. It changes everything for us. It certainly did for St. Thomas Aquinas in the 13th century, who stopped writing his incredible theological works. He said, "Compared to what I have seen, what I have written is only so much straw." Instead of circumcision as an outward sign of the covenant, we have the waters of baptism. Instead of an outward mark, which only the men wore, we have the profound seal of the waters of baptism, to which men and women, to whom all are invited. The church fathers saw Jesus everywhere in the Psalms. The Psalms formed the foundations of Jesus' own prayer life, and it obviously did for Stephen as well. Today, let us sing with the psalmist, who sees the reality of God long before Jesus' life. Let us say with Stephen, with Jesus, with the psalmist, "You are my rock and my fortress. I trust in you, Lord. Let your face shine upon your servant." And let us say with conviction of those who see God, "Into your hand I commit my spirit."